Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wired and Tired, A Guide to Revitalize Your Life by Ira Israel, narrated by Ira Israel. To all of my teachers and students, thanks for teaching me so much. Preface. In general, if you are an adult human being functioning in Western civilization circa 2023, it would not be rocket science to discern why you think what you think and feel what you feel. The preponderance of people I meet feel overworked, overstimulated, underloved, and underappreciated. There's a particular malaise wafting over our society. It's as if we've gone off course, lost what is essential to the human experience, and instead end up frittering away our days in front of sundry glass screens. In short, we are wired and tired. It doesn't often devolve into a full-blown panic attack resulting in a visit to the emergency room, or a major depressive episode, which is characterized by 2 weeks of symptoms resembling catatonia, the inability to perform the most basic of human functions. Wired and tired is more akin to dysthymia, a low-grade inability to take pleasure in almost anything. I've heard it called lifestyle fatigue. There's just way too much to do, way too much to see, way too much to listen to, way too much to read, too many Zoom discovery conversations, too many social media posts. It's overwhelming. We bury our heads in our phones like ostriches in the sand. Ironically, if you can call it that, inhabitants of Western civilization enjoy more safety, freedom, and privileges than almost any other culture that has ever existed. And yet, there are twin epidemics of anxiety, wired, and depression, tired, plaguing our society and contributing to seemingly infinite afflictions, including our horrifying opioid addiction problem, as well as our relatively high suicide rate. One problem that this book addresses is the fact that we were never given user's manuals for our minds, and I will argue that most of what is taught in our educational systems prepares us to work, to be productive members of society. Our educational system does not teach us how to live healthy, balanced lives full of loving and thriving authentic relationships. So let me ask you, has adult reality got you down? Do the pressures of being successful make you think crazy shit like walking into traffic or jumping off a bridge or taking your whole prescription for Xanax at once? Has being overcommitted made you stressed out? Do you have too many daily responsibilities? Does FOMO, fear of missing out, make you overcommit yourself, then feel like a failure for flaking because you're just too tired to attend another function? Have failed relationships made you jaded and mistrustful? Have you or could you be diagnosed with depression, anxiety, ADHD, OCD, or an addiction to shopping, food, video games, alcohol, drugs, debt, sex, porn, or something else? Or maybe you have accomplished all of your goals, house, partner, kids, cool vacations, and you still feel unsatisfied, wired and tired. Have you become disillusioned, disenchanted, or disappointed with your life in general? How many times per month do you think, I didn't sign up for this? I didn't sign up for all of these commitments, all of these subscriptions, infinite email solicitations, infinite software updates, never-ending upgrades, perpetual optimization, relentless, pointless meetings, that is, Zoom discovery conversations, relationships that suck the life out of me, a profound lack of free time, the inability to pursue my dreams, feeling wired and tired all the time? Could it be that the previous legacy illusions and enchantments, such as the American dream, marriage for life, and home borrowership, no longer bring us the joy, satisfaction, contentment, and happiness that they brought our parents and grandparents? Maybe you even feel enslaved to long-term commitments and contracts that are extremely difficult to quit. How much of your autonomy did you surrender to meet someone else's definition of the good life? How much agency have you really had in being the author and designer of your life? Being an adult in Western civilization today can be distressing, As I write this, we are at the tail end of our first but not last global pandemic. There are myriad highly volatile political situations nationally and internationally, a possible nuclear war. The majority of fellow human beings face economic and/or food insecurity on a daily basis, and climate events. Hurricanes, tornadoes, fires, earthquakes perpetually wreak havoc on many people's lives with no end in sight. There's also a political sea change occurring that many people believe will culminate in sundry civil wars, if not some sort of constant violent civil unrest or upheaval. Irrespective of personal political beliefs, most people would agree that our political system has been corrupted, does not work the way it was designed to work, and is now rigged or at least extremely unfair. Raise your hand if you enjoy paying taxes, please. Raise your hand again if you believe that your tax dollars are well spent by the government. Raise your hand if you think that the government has your best interest in mind when our representatives make new policies. Do you feel that quotidian reality for most fellow Westerners has become more or less precarious and uncertain in the past 50 years? As a thought experiment, please compare yourself to people who lived on the same soil 100 years ago. Millions of young men were conscripted to fight wars in Europe. Millions of mothers and wives waited for weeks or months for mail from their sons and husbands. Many of them received dreaded knocks on their front doors from fellow soldiers and chaplains, informing them that their loved ones had been killed in battle. Or how about 150 to 300 years ago, immigrating by boat across the Atlantic, staking out some land to farm, or going to work in a factory? Or 500 years ago, living in Europe under an aristocracy and submitting to the whims of a king or queen? On the other hand, most of us get quite unraveled at the thought of going a few hours without running water and sewage systems, or a life without electricity that powers our mobile phones, computers, and lights. And yet, both toilets and electricity are relatively recent inventions. The first commercial cars and airplanes were only born last century. How old is recorded sound? Egad. Just imagine no background 80s music playing for us nostalgic Gen Xers at Whole Foods, or the first photograph. And yet you would laugh at me if I asked to send you a fax, a black and white facsimile of a piece of paper transmitted electronically via zeros and ones after being scanned by light and then sent through a telephone line. Amidst all of these technical luxuries, as well as all of the incredible advances science has made, why are so many adults wired and tired? I have organized this book in a manner that will help you most expediently. The introduction is a brief deconstruction of the Western paradigm, just to help you understand that there are other perspectives, other possibilities, that it doesn't have to be this way permanently. Then, part one provides both immediate solutions to being wired and tired and long-term practices and lifestyle choices that will help you revitalize your life. Being wired and tired means that you are impatient and cannot wait until the end of the book to get readily applicable tools and practices to alleviate your anxiety and depression. Thus, I have front-loaded this book with solutions. Part two of the book will walk you through the sundry expected stages of life for adults in our society and the usual corresponding crises and ruptures. As someone who has traversed his 20s, 30s, 40s, and most of my 50s, I will provide you with a 40,000-foot view of why adults think the things that we think during the various epochs of our lives and how we can think alternatively about those stages. Part three of this book will give you a broad overview of subjects that you may have missed at university but would have helped you transcend the crises discussed in chapters 2 through 9 had you studied them. You will quickly note that I am an aggregator, meaning that I have covered a relatively wide breadth of the humanities over the past 40 years of studying, and I will offer you a few of the highlights with the intent of piquing your interest and inspiring you to go down rabbit holes of your own. I hope that the third part of this book provides an intellectual buffet that rejuvenates former passions, stimulates your mind, and inspires you to revitalize your life. Also, Part 3 will give you a new perspective on the sea change that Western civilization is currently going through, how we can best be prepared for it, and help engender a peaceful transition to the next society, if humanity as a species is able to avoid hemorrhaging itself off of the planet. It is incumbent upon all of us to awaken ASAP. Some of the subjects in Part 3 may not seem interesting to you, but I would argue that you learn more about a fellow human being by strolling around a museum discussing paintings than you would by sitting at Starbucks interviewing them about their lives. Again, what is taught in our educational system prepares us how to work, not how to be in healthy, loving, compassionate, supportive relationships. There is no class in our school system that provides a user's manual for our minds. This book is designed to help you think better, more propitiously. It will give you concise explanations and applicable solutions to typical ruptures in people's paradigms as well as quotidian crises, and provide all of the scientifically proven tools to keep you at the higher range of your happiness spectrums for the rest of your life. I want to plant the seed of you asking, why do I want what I want? What would need to occur for me to be truly content? How did I learn to desire what I desire? How do our desires differ from people from other cultures with different lifestyles? Can I make tweaks or adjustments to my own lifestyle that will engender more personal satisfaction? I hope to provoke the listener to gain new outlooks on various aspects of their lives at any age from 18 to 100 and thereafter. I remain adamant in my belief that our paradigms, the ways in which we see the world, are set at a very early age, and some of our subconscious beliefs are even established before we learn to say data. Similarly, there are no definitive understandings regarding the malaise that is particular to human beings. My wish is that this book lends some comforting narratives regarding why we think what we think and how we can make healthier conscious decisions that will help us think in the most interesting, most compassionate, most loving, and most joyous ways possible. Part 1. Introduction. I don't know who discovered water, but I doubt it was a fish. Marshall McLuhan. What are the subconscious ramifications and most common psychological patterns that emerge from being raised in Western civilization, going to elementary and high school, and becoming prepared for college or university or to enter the workforce? What are the unwitting problems caused by everything we consider to be normal, that is, capitalism, democracy, the myth of romantic love, etc.? In short, what are the common subconscious ramifications to growing up in America? One theme I see emerging from our primary educational system is that many people graduate from it believing that they think too much, that they can't get out of their heads, and they may have ADHD and/or anxiety. No baby was ever born thinking too much, and no baby was ever born thinking, I'm not good enough. These are learned traits, and I would argue that it is the highly competitive nature of our school system that is not setting its students up for calm, even-keeled, simple lives. The students are overstimulated, they have way too many obligations, and there is pressure on them to study a bunch of shit that is totally uninteresting to them and seemingly inapplicable to their lives. Our educational system was designed to make laborers and over the last 200 years has transmuted into making crazy people. Our educational system is traumatizing, even to the prom queen, even to the quarterback, even to the valedictorian. The system does not facilitate the greatness of the majority of students. It leaves them feeling wired and tired. Just for another perspective, in Adam Egoyan's film Exotica, one of the main characters who has experienced terrible traumas says, "Nobody asked to be born." I suspect that many people who had the mandatory Western educational system inflicted upon them would agree with that phrase. And yet, billions of people, mostly from other cultures, might not agree. Education is a privilege, and millions of people died fighting in war so that you could be bullied by a group of mean girls in high school. One thing we could agree on, though, is that these bodily incarnations of ourselves were previously non-existent for billions of years. They exist for a certain time, and Most of them age, grow bigger, then decline in similar fashions, and ultimately perish, never to be seen again in the same bodily incarnations. Although there have been people attempting to freeze their bodies and physically reincarnate, the people who would disagree with the phrase, "nobody asks to be born," most likely believe in a soul or some other form of ethereal consciousness that transmigrates from one incarnation to the next. We will explore these possibilities later in the discussions on spirituality. But for now, just please understand that birth, as we understand it from our scientific Western paradigm, is simply what happens approximately 9 months after a sperm fertilizes an egg. And from our perspective, you did not ask to be born any more than you asked to be tortured in high school. However, if your parents used the old-fashioned method of conceiving another, albeit minuscule, human being, approximately 100 million of your father's sperm cells rushed towards your mother's singular ovum in an attempt to fertilize it. One succeeded, and the other approximately 99,999,999 died. So in one sense, even if you didn't choose to be born, your existence can easily be viewed as miraculous, as winning the lottery. The fact that one sperm cell fertilized that one ovum against all odds to create you is astounding. So in one sense, your mere existence is akin to winning the lottery, or as unlikely as being struck by lightning while being bitten by a shark. But then you are thrown, as Heidegger stated, into a world, the world, our world, or what is often referred to as reality, with walls and ceilings and flashing lights and beds and couches and utensils and underwear and language and all sorts of clothing and accoutrement. As a baby, you were 100% dependent on caregivers for your survival. Some animals are born and can walk on their own 2 feet or 4 feet and find food in minutes. Human beings need to be fed, cleaned, and protected for years, or else they perish. There are many individuation processes that enable the child to become fully independent. The first individuation process is when the baby becomes mobile, so that it can escape predators by itself, is able to locate food, and learns to clean itself. In our culture, I suggest that toilet training would be a relative marker for this phase. However, during this time of weaning, I believe, along with many other attachment theorists, that there are subconscious patterns and/or paradigms established. Babies want to eat when they're hungry, sleep when they're tired, defecate when they need to defecate, and play when they feel playful. In order to help them become independent, productive members of society, caregivers must deny the baby from doing whatever it desires to do when it feels like doing it. Infants are put on feeding schedules, sleeping schedules, given play times, and ultimately, when they go to school, are given bathroom breaks. All of the aforementioned denial of natural present desires is what is considered to be normal for our society. What most people do not take into consideration is how terrifying these denials might be for the child as the caregivers train the infant to eat at mealtimes, play during playtimes, defecate during bathroom breaks, and sleep through the night. Attachment theory establishes relationship patterns that can emerge from how babies learn to individuate and take care of themselves. However, I also believe that there is deeper subconscious ingraining established in the infant's mind on whether the world is an inherently safe or dangerous place, and whether or not he or she can rely on, trust other people, and securely attach. My extrapolating becomes wildly important when these infants become adults and engage in relationships with other humans. The 67% of people who insecurely attach to their primary caregivers as infants, according to Mary Ainsworth, may have to strengthen certain emotional muscles as adults in order to transcend these insecurities and authentically attune and connect to other people. This glossing over attachment theory, how we connect and relate to others during our entire lives, will become extremely important in the chapters regarding adult relationships and authentic happiness. For now, it suffices to say that events occur, we may even call them ruptures, where children and adolescents must learn to stand on their own 2 feet. that their caregivers will not always be able to protect, feed, clean, and amuse them. I would argue that the individuation processes can be traumatizing for some children and that some of their later adult fears or self-sabotaging could correlate to traumatic experiences that occurred 20, 30, 40 years ago. For a rather simplistic and common example, mostly witnessed in soap operas and French films, a partner may cheat on their spouse because during the individuation process, they establish the subconscious belief that other people will always abandon them. Thus, they preemptively abandon their partner in order to stave off the reopening of their own primal abandonment wounds. Subconsciously, this person will leave their computer open or phone unlocked in order for their spouse to catch their infidelity. Drama. Drama is like a petri dish, and people, mostly subconsciously, create it because they don't feel comfortable expressing their authentic fears. However, as we all know, drama has horrible unintentional consequences and can erode trust and damage security irreconcilably. This is why I teach authenticity, to preclude the subconscious creation of drama, to preclude people from burning down their own and their neighbors' emotional houses just to be able to utter a few sentences that they had previously been too scared to utter. Again, the point is that whatever information you have about your infancy will help you firstly create a narrative of why you are who you are and why you think what you think and why you desire what you desire. Secondly, after you have that narrative, you can decide whether it is most propitious for you to lean into various situations or flee them. Because at base, fight, flight, freeze remains a primal governing factor for our extreme reactions. That mechanism is deeply ingrained in our hardware, so we should at least be aware of how, when, and why it gets triggered. In much of modern society, we are safe from predators, so our fight, flight, freeze response is unnecessary. However, primal fears can be triggered, mostly by unexpected stimuli from intimate relationships, and our bodies can resort to these animal behaviors. From personal experience, as well as witnessing couples in therapy for 16 years, I can tell you that it doesn't bode well when one partner in a relationship shuts down, freezes, because it usually signals abandonment to the other partner who may then be provoked to subconsciously fight or flee. Again, any fight, flight, freeze reactions are usually dramatic and could be precluded if we felt sufficiently safe to authentically express ourselves. The first individuation process occurs when the infant is mobile and taking care of his or her own needs independently of the caregivers, but for the most part, caregivers are always in the vicinity. The second individuation process takes place when the infant, 2 to 5 years old, is dropped off at school for the first time with new caregivers and other infants. For the sake of argument, let's assume that being brought up in a highly competitive, capitalistic, first world country unintentionally accelerates the individuation process. However, let's entertain the possibility that the psychological ramifications could actually be more dire than I'm conveying. According to the founder of primal therapy, Arthur Yanov, when a baby is put down for the first time, say in its own room while the parents sleep in another room, and allowed to cry itself out, cry until it's so exhausted that its only option is to fall asleep, the baby registers being put down as, "Why are you leaving me alone to die? You're killing me!" Yes, I'm intentionally making a pun. Put down means laid to sleep with infants, but euthanized with pets. Yanov argues that being put down for the first time creates a core or primal betrayal abandonment wound in many people. Later in life, according to this theory, when our partner cheats on us or we're fired from a job we love, we become distraught because this betrayal abandonment reopens our core betrayal abandonment wound. Babies simply want to be loved and taken care of. When they feel abandoned, they sense their own dependence on others and their own lack of autonomy, and they tend to freak out. So the unwitting ramifications of infants being put down to sleep alone and then sent off to school until the child becomes acclimated to these new realities is what I call, after Yanov, a primal betrayal abandonment wound. As animals, I believe that we are supposed to be in our mother's arms and sleeping with our primary caregivers, provided a secure environment, for 4 or so years. But the highly competitive nature of late capitalism has caused people to shorten this secure stage when the baby's needs are taken care of in the name of creating productive members of society as early as possible. A longer earning potential is a greater earning potential. However, one of the themes of my previous book, How to Survive Your Childhood Now That You're an Adult, is that our rather abrupt individuation processes have created a majority of insecure people whose abandonment fears, that is, the imposter syndrome, manifest as anxiety and depression, or to what I am referring to as wired and tired. One of the many reasons that so many Americans are currently being treated for anxiety and depression can be traced back to the traumas associated with an infant gaining its own sense of self, its own identity, and how resilient the baby is. What is important in terms of personal identity is how these traumas are interpreted and assimilated. If an infant is securely attached to his or her mother and/or primary caregivers, then it subconsciously knows that the mother would never really put it in harm's way. From Mary Ainsworth's strained situation experiment in 1969, we know that infants with secure attachment, 33% according to Ainsworth, do not freak out when the mother leaves them alone. The world is essentially safe to them. And more importantly, they can securely attach when the mother returns. However, the Dr. Spock Nietzschean, let the baby cry itself out. What doesn't kill it makes it stronger. Parenting style of previous generations may correlate with the spate of divorcees who do not truly know how to securely attach and reattach due to the stark and abrupt individuations that were forced upon them before they could speak. The world is essentially unsafe to them. Just as a thought experiment, imagine a family on a desert island and how they would interact for the first 4 years of their child's life, and compare it to our bottle-fed, raised by a nanny from a foreign country, sleeps in its own cage way of raising a baby. The scientific way of raising children seems to have starkly different mandates from a child being raised in nature. No child was ever born with low self-esteem. My proposal is that one result of our way of raising children in Western civilization is low self-esteem, rampant low self-esteem. Children assimilate the frowns of their caregivers trying to train them to use forks as, there must be something wrong with me. Mommy, or whatever other mother in Lacanian terms, would not be unhappy if I were perfect. Thus, many infants assimilate the idea that there must be something wrong with me during their first 0 to 4 years of their lives, and this low self-esteem dogs them through their adult years of addiction, infidelity, self-sabotage, inability to maintain a job, and many of the afflictions listed in the thousands of pages of cognitive and emotional disorders listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Additionally, our educational system is very cliquey. When children are making same-age friends and forming cliques at school, they notice that they are excluded from some groups. Again, it is possible that these phenomena are assimilated as, there must be something wrong with me. If I were different, cooler, perfect, taller, etc., then that group would accept me. The funny thing is that I would say that the majority of people, and I admit that my psychotherapy clients represent a skewed population, believe they are outsiders. There's something perverse about our culture that makes most people, even the prom queen, football quarterback, movie star, rock star, tech billionaire, feel marginalized. This could be a result of the splintering of our society, but until we find or create some common core values like compassion, then it will remain difficult for people from different tribes, geeks, jocks, yuppies, millennials, bobos, Republicans, Democrats, progressives, socialists, to name a few, to communicate empathetically with each other. What can be said about teenage years that hasn't already been documented on Netflix and HBO? It's all about angst, seemingly. Why are these years so arduous for the unwilling participants? Is it the hormonal changes, peer pressure, the desire to be liked among a sea of haters? continuously being judged, weighed, calculated, squeezed into a box.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?